Welcome to Early Career Principles Webinar Series. Today is Tuesday, December the 4th, 2018. My name is Aaron Lurie, and I'm the Director of Professional Learning at NAESP. Today, I have two of the best of the best with me today on our subject, which is dealing with difficult people, staff, teachers, students, and stakeholders. Our two speakers today are David Wick and Dr. Liza Caraballo Suarez. The first speaker, David Wick. David Wick currently serves as NAESP's president-elect and is a principal at Columbia Falls Junior High School in Columbia Falls, Montana. David has been a member of the Montana Association of Elementary School and Middle School Principals and NAESP for the past 21 years. David, welcome to the Early Career Principles webinar.
Thank you, Aaron. I appreciate the introduction. As additional introduction, I want to say that I'm very excited to be here with you today to talk about this topic that all of us experience in one way or another at our schools. It's been something over the past 24 years as a school administrator that I've dealt with in a lot of different arenas. My goal today is to provide you with some practical advice as to how I have done so, and I look forward to learning from you at the same time with your questions or comments as we move forward in the webinar. And I really appreciate you joining us today and having the opportunity to work with Liza. She's a great principal. I'm sure she'll have great things to offer here as our webinar continues. As we begin today, we're going to move to the next slide, and we're asking a poll question of all those of you who have joined the webinar, and it reads, how many years of experience do you have as a school leader? And please select one of the five choices, 1 to 3 years, 4 to 6 years, 7 to 10 years, or more than 10 years. And if you're not a school leader right now, you're a teacher or aspiring leader of some kind, please put not applicable. And then we'll know who our audience is out there today of the people that have joined our webinar. We're expecting up to 300 people to join the webinar today, so we'd really like to hear that information from you. So Honor's going to take that information from the poll and post it for us all to see who's out there joining the webinar today. So we appreciate your cooperation and assistance as we take our poll to start the webinar today. Okay, so as we can see by our poll, about a third of our audience today is a beginning principal in the first 3 years, and then another third has more than 10 years. So I'm wondering why those that have more than 10 years aren't giving this webinar themselves rather than having me talk to you today. I'm teasing about that, but I'm sure you have a lot of suggestions for each other. Hopefully we can share in our learning today so that all of us can get a better handle on how to deal with difficult people. Thank you for taking part in our poll. And we're going to move on to the next slide, which is a question that we would like to have you answer at some point during the webinar. It can happen at any time. If you type this your answer into the question box, you will see your question showing up on the webinar on the right column, and then we'll try to answer all those questions as the webinar continues if we haven't answered them during the time that we're talking. So what's your major issue in dealing with difficult people? And we'd really like to hear what kinds of things you would like us to answer if possible. If we can't get the answer, we'll look it up for you and research it like we always do. So we appreciate your assistance in answering this question. So you will be able to follow along with those questions as we go. So I have just two slides today that talk about dealing with difficult people. The first element is dealing with difficult parents and stakeholders. Luckily, at this point in my career, I don't have a lot of difficult staff. So I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. One of the advantages of being a principal in the same school for over 20 years is I've gotten to hire the people that I want on the bus, as they say, and that's been really good. So it's been a little less problem for me, at least recently, with having difficult staff. But we'll talk about that as we continue. So I want to talk a little bit about dealing with difficult parents and stakeholders. All of us deal with different people in our communities that cause us some difficult times, and not only trying to figure out how to solve the problem that's there, but also dealing emotionally with the people who have high emotions. A lot of times it has to do with their own child. Some of them have not had a lot of experience in dealing with their child having trouble at school in one way or another, either behaviorally or academically, and so they come off in a very emotional manner. And so I'm going to talk to you a little bit about how I look at those things. The first element is I assess the situation. I try to figure out what the level of anger is by the parent. And I hate to say this, but in this day and age, we've even wondered sometimes if we need police presence. So I try to figure that out on the phone. If a parent calls, they're very angry. Kind of depends on how threatening they are. If I talk to them live, or if it's a message that they've left for me, then I have to try to assess the situation and call a resource officer if I think police presence might be necessary, if there's some threat toward some member of the staff or a student or even myself. And that's the first thing I do, is try to assess the situation. The second thing in assessing the situation I try to do is it something that I have to immediately deal with, or can it wait until tomorrow? I have some well-known parents who call with being upset with something here at school, and some of those times I tell them, well, I had meetings after school and I was unable to call you, and that's just a little psychological technique I use, because often their anger is less. The next day, they've calmed down a little bit, they've gotten a little more about the situation. Depending on the parent, sometimes that's not a good strategy, because they're more angry the next day if I haven't returned their call. But typically I try to determine whether or not it's an immediate need or something that I can wait on. The next thing in assessing the situation is I decide whether or not I need to have witnesses there. That might be my supervisor, it might be my a teacher or colleague, could be any number of different people that I might decide in the situation to have a witness there to assist me, so that my words are not twisted by the particular parent. So that's the first thing I do, is assess the situation. The second thing is I set ground rules for the conversation with the parent. I don't do this overtly. I do this in different situations when I can do it overtly, but I don't do it. I do it in my own head. I set up the ground rules for myself and for the other person, and that is being respectful. As soon as the parent moves toward, or other stakeholder moves to, profanity or threats, then the conversation is over. I tell them, that just can't be. We're not going to have this conversation until you're calmer. So I set the ground rules in my head of what I want, and I let them know these are the things that are my demands in this conversation. If they come to meet with me, which I typically ask them to do rather than over the phone, because I think it's really difficult to have a conversation over the phone when the person's emotional, I bring them in and I project a very open image and tone with them. I use an open body posture. I pull my chair out from behind the desk and face them a little more than I normally would. I always get a notebook out. I start taking notes. And I start with a customer service approach, like, how can I help you today? What can I do for you today? Obviously, you're upset. Is there something that I can do immediately to assist you? And so I project that very open image and tone, so that they know I'm here to help. I'm not the enemy, and I'm not working against them. Number four bullet point there is the most important thing, and that is listening. There's nothing more important than when the parent comes in listening to what they have to say. They're usually emotional and have a lot to say, so I listen to them. I take notes. I nod. I agree with them on certain things. I find things that we can have consensus on, and I look for those very clear indications of the things I can agree on with them. I tell them things like, well, I wouldn't want that to happen with my child either. I appreciate you bringing that to my attention. Those kinds of things. Try to find those points of agreement and consensus. And then a lot of times their anger will wind down in a few minutes, after a few minutes of very intentional listening. So if you have to mark something today that you haven't done before, it's really important to listen. When I began my career, when a parent would call and be angry, I typically would try to answer right away, and they're not listening. I mean, they're not listening to what I have to say. The listening part comes from me. I have to listen to them. So the next thing I do is offer solutions to the problem. I look for immediate solutions, if possible, to the problem that they might present to me. If they say this was the problem, and I tell them, well, that's really actually very easy to solve, I try to do that almost right away if I can. Sometimes if they're very angry, I say things like, would it be okay for me to respond now? They've gone for, unfortunately, 5 or 10 minutes sometimes. And I say, is it okay for me to tell you my perspective on this, particularly if it's something to do with me? Because then I have an opportunity to have direct knowledge of what's happened. So I'll say, would it be okay for me to respond now? And if they say, no, I don't want to hear what you have to say, then I plan another meeting with them or a telephone call or something like that so that I can find another time to go forward with them. Many times it has nothing to do with you as the school leader. It has to do with something somebody else has done. That's one of the burdens that I find is very common, is that it's somebody else's action with their child. And so they want us to answer to and answer for the behavior of others or the words of others when often we don't know exactly what's happened. So I answer that question after listening to the parent intently and taking notes. May I look into this and get back to you later? And that's just a practical strategy that has seemed to work. Very rarely do they ask us for an immediate solution. I had a situation last year where a couple of parents came in. They'd actually been in a traffic accident with one of my teachers who was trying to emerge, and they claimed the teacher was trying to run them off the road, and they made some very loud and profane attempts to get me to bring the teacher down to the conference room to visit with me. Obviously, I held that off as best I could and said, no, I'm not going to bring the teacher down here. This isn't a school issue. I definitely would have the police there if I was going to have you meet with the teacher. But it was my secretaries kind of laughed afterwards. They were looking at the meeting through glass and hearing the yelling and screaming from the two people. And they said, well, that wasn't a very pleasant meeting. And I said, no, it wasn't, but I certainly wasn't going to bring the teacher down to meet with the parents. So we all have those situations, some of which are more easily handled than others. Hopefully you've never had anything like that happen to you that I have over the years. So I do offer solutions. I did offer those people that I would talk to the teacher, but I was not going to allow them to talk to the teacher at the time because obviously they were very angry. The situation, by the way, did resolve itself and wasn't as serious as their emotions at the time were about this particular situation. One of the things that I next do is I discuss the varying perspectives from my perspective, student perspective, parent perspective, and staff member perspective. And I don't know how things happen in your school, but I have to spend quite a bit of time talking about discussing varying perspectives that students have, and that student perceptions are not always accurate about what exactly has happened. Some of the examples I would use would be, the student will say, this teacher doesn't like me. And then you get to the bottom of it, and they say, well, why do you think the teacher doesn't like you? And they'll say, because they gave me a bad grade on this assignment. And so it's just a way for students to perceive things. Sometimes they'll think the teacher doesn't like them because they've done poorly on a particular assignment. We find that kind of not necessarily humorous, but inaccurate. So we do talk with parents about that. It's certainly a lesson that I spend a lot of time with in meetings with parents to say, you know, one of the things that's typical about a junior high student and our middle school student as well as some elementary students is things are taken very seriously, and sometimes those perceptions are very exaggerated. On the other hand, I also never say never. I had an experience at the beginning of my career where a teacher said something very inappropriate to a student in a disciplinary way, and I told the parent, I know this teacher would never do that. I'll check into it, but I don't believe it. And then I went up to the teacher, and sure enough, the teacher had said those very words. And so I had to eat my words and say, yes, that was said. And as a result, the teacher faced disciplinary action. But I would just recommend that when that parent calls with anger, I don't use that story in specifics, but I always say, that doesn't sound quite right to me, but I never say never. So let me get back to you. I'll check into it to see if that's accurate or not. If it's a parent that's difficult and it has a continuing disagreement with me, and I have had those situations over time where the parent just refuses to give up certain things and or continues to find different things, I think we need to set boundaries as school leaders. I tell the person that I'm going to make time for you, but I only have so much time. So I used to have a parent that would meet me every day at my office, and I would say, you know, I'll give you a few minutes, but I have other duties that I need to do. I work out deals with my wonderful secretaries, which we all have great school secretaries, and said, you know, if I'm in there with Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so for more than 10 minutes, knock on my door and remind me about the meeting I have. And that's sometimes used as a signal so that I can escape from the parent who's continuing with some kind of disagreement with me. Another technique that I use is, I'm sorry, Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so, but I guess we're going to have to agree to disagree on this, because I will give my reasons for a decision that I've made, or tell them what I can tell them, but I'm going to eventually have to say I don't agree with what you're saying, that teacher needs to be fired or whatever the situation might be. I have to tell them that we need to move forward. We can't keep hitting the same issue because we're not going to agree on it. And then if worst comes to worst, I tell them you're very welcome to visit with my supervisor, and I try to forewarn my supervisor that such and such parent is going to come over and talk with you about this issue, and we move forward that way. Try to give him or her as much background information as I possibly can so they know what's happening with the parent. And we made a rule at our school that we weren't going to call any parent crazy. So I just want to tell you, because we were using the word "that person's crazy" too much. And so I hope you're laughing. I can't hear anybody on the phone, so I don't know if you are or not. But we did decide we weren't going to use that, because usually there's some truth to the information. I always say that when a person is involved in a dispute, there's at least a grain of truth in what they're saying. So I look for, when a parent calls and they're angry, I look for those things that are actually accurate, or why the person might be upset with the staff member or with myself, and look for all the reasons that are legitimate beyond all the emotions of the moment. So that's what I try to do. So that's dealing with difficult parents and stakeholders. And if we could move to the next slide, I'm going to talk a little bit about dealing with difficult staff. When I said earlier that I don't really have many difficult staff right now, I feel very privileged and blessed to have been in my job for the amount of time that I have. There have been problems over the years, and those have resolved themselves in a variety of ways. I've read a number of texts that talk about when a leader comes in and staff has been there a while, and they find that the leader doesn't have the same philosophy that they have, they eventually leave. And that's what's happened, is that people who don't have the same philosophy we have and the beliefs that we have about dealing with children in a very respectful and positive way in every interaction, that decided that they wanted to treat children a little bit differently, they have left our staff, and that's been actually a good thing over the years that those people have left. I want to tell you that as new principals, you're going to have problems. You have to anticipate there's going to be problems with staff and between staff. That's just the fact that people are people. There are going to be problems. You cannot avoid them. And the better you get at understanding that you can't let these problems envelop you and cause you to change your philosophies because you're worried about people being upset about something, the better off you're going to be. So you need to be able to have a thicker skin, and certainly something that I've worked on over the years, trying to have a thicker skin. So one thing that I would tell you about anticipating problems, I think it's important that you're in tune with your own instincts. And, you know, when you look at certain texts that are out there, like Malcolm Gladwell's Blink, you know that sometimes those initial instincts that you have are just as good as a research decision. So in anticipating problems, use your past experience to look forward and realize that you're anticipating there's going to be problems with this. I'll go into a staff meeting sometimes and I know, boy, this is going to be a hard issue. We're going to have a difficult time coming to consensus. So go ahead and anticipate those problems. Your gut instincts are probably right. So be aware and anticipate those problems, especially if change is occurring in your school of one type or another, whether it be personnel or program. If change is happening, utilize all the resources that you have at your disposal about change. And, of course, there's been so much written about change that I think you'll have no problem finding other people who've dealt with this kind of change and what problems are going to result as are going to happen as a result. So I want to also say that, you know, educators are human, so they're going to have stages in their careers where things are not going to go right. Things happen. People do change through time, so that staff member that was always very positive has something that happens that you may or may not even know about that causes them to change and be a little more difficult and actually fight against something that you did not anticipate. And so just realize that sometimes that's the case. The next two bullets are actually kind of funny because they look like they're the same thing, but I want to explain why they aren't. I wrote, don't be reactive, but don't ignore. One of the things that I found over time is that I need to try to avoid the emotional roller coaster that others have, and especially in time of year, changes can happen. I try to remain as steady as I possibly can and not change my approach no matter what is happening with others. And so that's one of the things I say about don't be reactive. But I also want to say problems don't go away typically if you ignore them. So while you can sometimes wait before you deal with a problem, it's best that you don't ignore the problem. At some point you do address the problem. Remember that from the very start, people are watching you as a leader. So when something happens, a person challenges you in a staff meeting, they're watching very carefully what you're going to do about that particular problem. So I would say, you know, people start with initial impression, and then every interaction that you have in a problem situation, they're observing and watching. As well as our students do, they watch everything about their teachers. Your staff is watching how you're dealing with difficult problems in the school. I want to recommend that you always keep your anger or frustration under control. The longer you're with your staff, they'll be able to tell you, tell if you're upset in one way or another, but you have to keep your frustrations and anger under control because others do not. And sometimes they'll come in and they're not as professional as they should be. But your job is always to remain professional. I also want to say that in a professional way, I point out the unwanted behaviors. I tell them this is not okay. It's not okay in a staff meeting for this to happen. Most of the time I'll do that in private, but I always want to make sure that they know exactly what the unwanted behaviors are that I have And then if need be, I do follow protocol consistently regarding misbehavior. So if someone continues to do those kinds of things to undermine my leadership, I let them know that these are the things that I'm going to do, including verbal warnings, written warnings, and elements that go into their personnel file. So I have just a couple more bullets that I want to share about staff. One thing I would say is be very proactive. The more you're out in your building talking to people, the more accepted you're going to be as a person that wants to solve the problems. One thing that I always try to do is draw my enemies close. So if it's someone that seems to be kind of a negative staff member, I try to include them, talk to them about the decisions that I'm making, try to get their input ahead of time so they're not surprised by anything. If two individuals are having trouble together, with each other, I separate them, I meet with them individually, and I'm very honest and forthright in my conversations with them about what the expectations are. Again, identifying the unwanted behaviors when they're having difficulty with each other. Another thing that I would suggest, I bring my enemies close, but I also bring those people that are my allies close, bring them in and say, what do you think we should do about this staff problem? And they're very helpful a lot of times because they know what's happening. And I don't mean that you put them in a compromising situation, because in casual conversation, if you're out and about a lot, you can say, how did you see this that happened at staff meeting? And it's not like you're favoring them or anything, but you're actually soliciting their advice, and that's always very appreciated. And the final thing that I say about being proactive is use humor. I use humor all the time and say, you know, by the way, Liza, I messed that up. I apologize. I'll try to do better next time. And, you know, it's just another mistake I made. I just need somebody else to tell me what to do, or whatever I say, just to try to lighten the mood and let them understand that I'm human and I do make mistakes too. So the last two bullets are listen. I feel that people, sometimes all they need is to be heard. They don't need anything more from you than that, than just the fact that you're listening to them. I take their input and I use it whenever possible. Sometimes I can't use their input, but I try it as much as I can. I tell them how I'm going to act and talk. I tell them, this is who I am. This is, I don't know what you're used to, but this is what you can expect from me. And then secondly, I tell them, this is what I expect from you. So I'm very explicit with what I want. I offer solutions to the problems that are identified, and I recommend solutions to their unhappiness about something that we've done if I can, including sometimes I think that they ought to look for a different job or a transfer to another school if they don't like the way we run things. And I always ask in the final bullet if they want me to suggest some solutions to the issue. I ask them first, because sometimes they don't really want me to solve the problem. They just want me to listen, so I do. If they are open to my solutions, then I give them. So those are my practical pieces of advice. I hope you found some nuggets that might be of assistance to you over the years, and I appreciate you listening to what I have to say. I'm very honored to be able to share some information with you today. So with that, I'm going to pass it on to Liza, and thank you very much, and I'll be back to answer any questions later if there are any. Thank you.
Yes, and David, we have several questions in the question box. If you'd like to just scroll while I'm introducing Liza and see some of those questions that we can answer at the end, we have several people posted questions in the box, and I'll get to them later. But at this time, we're going to move on to Dr. Carvalho Suarez, and she is the principal of the Magnet School of Architecture, Engineering, and Design in Brooklyn, New York. She's also a board of directors member of the National Association for Elementary School Principals, and she began her third term at an at-large minority director on August the 1st, 2018. She will represent all minority principals across all 50 states. Welcome again, Liza.
Thank you. Thank you, Aaron. And I want to thank everyone who's currently joining us on this wonderful and interesting topic. My lights went off. Give me one second. We have those. Sorry about that. We have those electrical lights that go off automatically. I've been a principal for 18 years, supervisor of 20, in the system over 30. So I've had my shares of difficult people at different capacity, even now at this level. But there, to me, I always believe that there's always a solution depending on how we assess the problem. Next. One of the things that I'm going to talk about today is teachers, years of experience. Teachers do come to the table with different experience, and they want to be heard. One of the things I've noticed, in order to have the organization or the team that we all desire as principals, is leveraging out the strength in teachers. What do I mean by that? Basically, is assessing their strength and not just their weakness. We all have weaknesses, and we understand. But even those years, for example, I had a teacher who just recently retired after 36 years in the system. She was extremely loving, and she loved to read to children. So her reading was one of her strengths. I encouraged her to facilitate some of the professional development workshops with me during teachers' professional development, which was good. It boosted up her ego. She began to collaborate. She began to reach out to everyone, and you can see that her demeanor of teaching changed over the years. There are others that came into, and I'm thinking right now, he's no longer with us, but he loved to sing. Although singing is not all we had, I allowed them, speaking with him, we talked about how can we use his music ability to help us. And basically what he did was he facilitated and created assemblies, music assemblies, and he did multicultural, especially during the holidays. And that was really one good thing. So it's really looking at not only the years of experience you can have, and I know I just recently talked about the veterans, but you also have some young teachers that once they become tenured, you kind of see them change a little bit. So how do we work with them? Again, we tap into their strength and see at their third year, what can they bring to us? What have they seen? Whether it's feedback on certain working with certain parents, certain students. And that's how we wind up working with them. Professional development, I had a teacher, wow, when I first came here, that no matter what we gave her, she did not want to go to professional development at all. She knew it all. She said it all. She was the ideal, according to her, she was the ideal teacher that any parent would want. So again, I would bring professional development into the school where she had no choice because during working hours she had attended to them. But there was a focus. When I sat with her, we would sit down and say, why should we attend this professional development? And we will focus on the need. So that would really kind of help that. And she also came about and was able to work with us. Professional learning communities. You might say, difficult teachers, what has that got to do? Well, when you bring teachers' strength and allow them to work with other teachers, again, it goes back to building their confidence. It goes back to letting others, other than the school, within the school community, really know who they are. So they feel validated. They feel like, okay, they are contributing. I am not just being put out there regardless of the new curriculum, regardless of new changes. So they do give input. The most important thing that I found out time over, again and again, is sharing common vision. And usually when I interview people, we discuss what our vision is. We discuss the possibility of how they can input or contribute to that vision that we have. I normally drink, well, one of the things, and it's funny because people will tell you, is I remind them of the questions that we asked during the interview. So should something happen throughout the course of the year, I would say, hey, remember? You told me you were willing to stay after school to work with me on certain issues because during the day we couldn't. And they were like, oh, yeah, I remember. So that's, again, validating. The other thing I do have is an open door policy. Not only do I go to them, they come to me. So, and this is at all times. And you would wonder, what has that got to do with difficult teachers? I would echo everything that Dave Wick already said, and he said it very eloquently. But I also want to add to what I've done in order to help and rectify some of the situations we have. We all know that we can write them up and put letters into the file. But as principals, who are we really connecting to the teachers? Do we get to know who they are? Do they know their culture? Do they know their family? Where are they coming from? I know sometimes we say as principal, well, we have nothing to do with that. But yes, we do. Because in order to connect and bring the team around, not only are we getting to know them professionally, but we also need to get to know them on a personal level. Not so personal, but yes, personal. Enough to help us out. Because as leaders, school leaders, we might have some resources that we can send out to provide to the staff, the teachers, that might help them out. And what you get in return is someone who say, wow, school leader, someone who really cares. It's not just someone who's looking at us as just teachers and telling us what to do. So that leads to the support. Discipline, again, I echo Wick. You have to write them up. They have to know that you two are responsible. They have to own up to what they're doing, their responsibility. They're accountable for teaching those students. And it's funny, just recently, we here in New York City, we focus a lot on equity and equity and excellence. And culturally, I had a PD with my teachers, and there's nothing wrong with after you do a PD and we teach teachers or we support them on how to discipline, on how to work with the different types of cultures in the school. Sometimes teachers also need a rude awakening of saying, maybe this is not the job for you. Maybe it is too much. But at the end, we're here for a purpose. We signed up to educate these students, and we really, really need to work with them on different levels. So as teachers, yes, they are human. Yes, we need to look further into them on their expertise. And, of course, there will be a teacher or two that at the end you might want to have no other choice but to exit, but doing it in a professional and correct way after showing support. I've gone to many arbitration with teachers, but I've brought evidence of supporting. How do I support them? Peer-to-peer. How else do I support them? Professional development. How else do I support them? Doing demos for them, co-teaching. So, yes, it does take a little bit of extra time, but at the end, it'll make your job a lot easier. Next. Which leads to students and parents. Parents, again, will come in and want to be heard. I've had some difficult parents. Just recently I had a parent who was extremely upset because she felt that one of my colleagues had actually dismissed her and her child from his school. And it had nothing to do with that. It's getting to know parents. So pretty much what I did, rather than hearing her telling me about how my colleague threw her out of the school, I pretty much said, okay, let's talk about who are your children. Tell me about your children because I really don't know them. What's out there or what about them do I need to know in order to help them out, whether it's behavior, whether it's academic, whether it's with uniforms, what exactly is out there? Mom got very sentimental and explained to me how she was in a domestic violent situation, and she felt that everybody was picking on her kids and on her. Well, I have to tell you that at this point, the mother has been invited to my office many times. We do speak with her. We speak about how we can help her child. Her children are extremely bright, but behavior, and they do need help. So we, one at a time, we brought in the school psychologist. Because remember, parents don't want to come into just your office and feel that there's 20 other educators around. They feel intimidated. So we began to speak with the school support-based team, the school psychologist, who gave us some resources. The next time around, we not only brought the school psychologist, we brought the social worker. And so now mom comes around and she asks us for help. So parents want to be heard. But we as principals and we as school leaders, or leaders in general, we need to know who are the audience we're working with, who are the children, where do they come from? I have a large population of immigrants. A lot of the parents that come here crying on the day that they said that they were going to leave and be deported. We have to sit down and provide students as well as parents with the extra help that they need, that it's going to be okay. It's not easy, but we can do it. But as school leaders, it is our duty to really get to know who is in our building. Can the students really relate to the teachers? Can they identify themselves as the teachers? Or are we all just hiring certain people that the students have no, cannot relate to? Secondly, you have the community. How can we bring the community in? What's out there? Who are the merchants? Who are the helpers? Who are the community helpers? The doctors, the dentists, the police department. How can we relate to them, and how can the children relate to them? So that's another thing. And last but not least, again, going back to the families. You know, there is a book called Rice. And we all eat rice differently, but how is it different from my culture to your culture? How can we connect? So this is something very important that we need to, as leaders, once the students and the parents realize that we're trying to connect, that we're not trying to dismiss them for whatever situations they come in, then they will begin to listen to us. Is it easy? Absolutely not. Just last year, I had a second grade parent coming in, cursing up a storm. I shut the door. I let her rage and complain. And let me tell you, the words coming out of her mouth, you would say, this is not a lady, like this is a truck driver. I sat down. Of course, the second grader was sitting next to mom. And second grader thought, hey, mom is saying all of this, so I'm going to jump from seat to seat. I was sitting down in the same office. And what did I do? When mom finished, I said, excuse me, ma'am, are you finished? I hear you clearly, but we're still not targeting the problem. So let's sit down and let's see how we together can help your child. No one's judging your child and no one is judging you. But we need to not show examples that your daughter should be looking at. For example, you yelling at me and me yelling at you, because that's not going to happen. Then I turned around to the young lady and I said to me, please sit down for a minute. We need to talk, you, mommy, and I. And before you know it, mommy agreed to working with us. Mommy agreed we're helping the child out and giving her counseling. And most importantly, mommy did tell the child, you need to sit down and listen to the principal. So once they see that we're not attacking them, that we are trying to help, fine. They just want to be heard. The connection, the validation. Students will always try something different. For example, you have those difficult students that no matter how many times those parents come up here, and yes, even at an early elementary level, you do have difficult students. But what are we doing as school leaders to help them, to prepare them throughout the 21st century? Well, there are social and emotional support. You have here at our school, we're currently working on the Leader in Me. Not that I'm advertising, because that is not for everyone. But there are other ones out there. But how are we as leaders trying to prepare them socially and emotionally to be able to deal with conflict of interest, deal with the conflicts, conflict resolutions? How are we preparing them? Got it. We understand. We got to teach them reading, writing, and math. But how are we going to do that if they can't, if they're too busy thinking about somebody bullying them around or bothering them, especially during lunchtime when we are not around. How are we helping them? What are the tools we're giving them? And then we can think about also the interventions. How are we helping them academically? Are we just saying that they need to be evaluated and we move on with life because evaluation is the answer to it all? Absolutely not. What are some of the interventions that we have in the classrooms with the teachers to work with those students, tier one, tier two, and so forth? And last but not least, going back to students and parents, yes, sometimes we need mediation. And going into the community, combining with what's out there, we do have mediation, and usually here in New York City, when parents demand, the students demand that they, well, actually the student parents, when they demand that they want to speak to the other parent, what I do is I bring in what we call officers, youth officers, and they come in and they speak to the parents first as to what exactly is the problem, if there's any problem, and then we also worry about talking to the students. Last but not least, I mean, let's quickly go into the differentiation. When working with students, we definitely need to know, as we all do, that we learn differently. So when working with students, we have to make sure that we are differentiating their learning. What is out there? How can we help the English language learners? Or do we, or the students with special needs? Do we have enough visuals? Do we have enough audio? Do we have enough books? Do we have enough illustration? So it goes on. We need to see how we can get to those difficult students, because those difficult students, as we call them difficult, might not be difficult. They just need the extra help. And once again, we need to validate them. How do we validate not only the parents, the students? How do we connect to them? And most of all, let's readdress the instructions that we're always working with, whether it's teachers or school leaders. Next one, please. Stakeholders. Here in New York City, we have, one of the things we have is we're trying to work out with politicians. We have a choice. Certain politicians are always busy. They're either in Washington, D.C., or they're too busy. As school leaders, we need to go visit them personally if we have to. Invite them in. Have your PTAs invite them in. Have the teachers invite them in. Invite them into your buildings. It's funny, and I'll say this very quickly. We had a politician, brought him in, saw our new science STEM lab, and he turned around and he said, wow, where did you get the money? And I said, well, this is from my budget. He goes, you mean my office never gave you? I'm like, no, but we would love to have more money. Guess what? The following year, because he saw what I did with the little I had, we got what we call here Resoway. So we were part, and we were able to upgrade our old computer lab. But it's so important. Likewise, go visit them in their office. They love for us to visit them. They love for the parents to visit them. In New York City, we deal with Central. Sometimes Central, kind of like a disconnect from the school system, from the school level, but it's so important that you reach out to who's in the Department of Education, who's in the English language department, who is in the school, school with special needs department. You as a school leader, make yourself known. Go out there and market and say, hey, my students need you. How can you help me? How can I get you in here? How can we get money? Connect. The same thing with human resource. When they redesigned the whole entire they revamped the districts into regionals, human resources, I did not know who they were. But I took a day, I went myself, and I introduced myself to the payroll secretary, to the budgeting manager, to the procurement manager, and guess what? We're on a first name basis, they know who I am, I know who they are. District wise, you have the district, the superintendent. Get to know your superintendent. Invite your superintendent. The same thing with community. It's a matter of putting a picture to your face, a name, invite them into your home. What can you do for us? How can you help us? Or better, let's celebrate with all the wonderful things the kids have done for us. And last but not least, the overall of what I have been talking about. Next. The organization that you have is yours, whether you're first year, 5 years, 10 years, whether you're revamping or not. It is up to you as a school leader to get to know them again as personal and get to know who are your key players, because those key players are the ones that are going to go out there and work with those who are quite difficult. As a school leader, be transparent, be present, be visible. Let them know that you're not hiding behind the door or behind the desk, that you have an open door policy, that it's okay. Available, be available, whether it's email, my teachers text me late at night, in the morning, but that's the kind of relationship I have. Most importantly, you need to connect, whether it's difficult teachers, whether students, parents, stakeholders. It's so important. I keep on repeating it, connect. Yes, the different ways to connect. Because if you can't connect, you won't be able to communicate. Communication, whether it's listening, whether it's reaching out, whether it's telling them, hey, the students are doing good, we're having a great celebration. It's so important, because in communication, that's where a lot of miscommunications occur. So be very focused, to the point, but yet gentle, firm. Last but not least, collaboration. If you collaborate with everyone and you acknowledge everyone and everyone acknowledges who you are, as a team, you definitely will lead to equity and excellence, because equity and excellence is all about connecting, communicating, and collaboration. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. I told you all I had the best of the best, and all this information is all gathered. What's the amazing thing about this is that most of the questions were answered as you all were speaking. I do see a few questions that I'm going to share with you, and hopefully you can answer them really quickly, because we're on a 10-minute time frame. The first question, either panelist can answer. The question is, are there special ways you recommend for working with millennials, and that's parents or teachers?
Dave, do you mind? Or can I? I'll just jump in. It's funny you should say that, because we are currently in a gentrification neighborhood, and what I've done is I've invited a lot of parents either one-to-one conversation as, how do you see your child, or what would you like that this school to provide your child with, number one. The next thing I would do is invite them to parent-teachers association meetings. I would also invite them to school leadership meetings as observers. So if you include and you pick on their brain to work, however, beware, and I'm going to echo what Dave said, sometimes you have to agree to disagree, but at the same time, you don't want to push them away, because they're the ones that currently are going to be the leaders of tomorrow. So as we exit and they enter, I think it's important to see what they have, and maybe you can connect to it, built on what you already have.
Great. I have another question. Oh, go ahead, Dave.
Could I address that just for a second? Obviously, I'm not a millennial, but I think people are people, and so what we try to do is relate to them and understand where they're coming from. We try to be involved with social media. I'm actually doing that myself. We do talk with our parents about being involved. We know that the millennials are not as apt to be involved with organizations, so we take, as Liza said, every opportunity to connect with them as much as we can. But I find that there isn't really much generational difference, except usually the younger the parent is, the more difficulty they might have in dealing with the stress of their student having some trouble. A veteran parent, as I call them, somebody who's a little bit older or has had a number of children already or even one child, they're usually able to understand this is not an end-of-the-world type of thing. It's just a problem. We're going to get over it as part of your child's learning experience. So I don't find a lot of difference between parents regardless of age. So thank you.
All right. Now, this question I definitely need to get an answer from, because this is something that people have problems with on a regular basis. The question is, and maybe I can get a response just like you did from both of you all, it says, why would you build up or praise people that are not healthy for the culture? Again, we're trying to create a win-win situation, and people are still difficult, but I guess a way of doing it is praising them. You want to elaborate on that?
Sure, I'll go ahead first on this one. What I find is that there's always something I can praise about people. So I find something that they do well. I talk with them about the things that I think they're doing well and also the things that I think they need improvement on. And it's all about the relationship that you build with a person. So I never give out false praise. I do some general messages that say, we so appreciate you and thankful for you for doing the great job that you do and those kinds of things. But on an individual basis, I never praise someone for doing things that are just expectations. I praise them for the things that they do well and then try to set those high expectations for them for being part of a healthy culture and encourage them to say, there's a reason why we do these things together and there's a reason why we all share in these values that we have in our school because it's good for kids and that's what it's all about. But it's also a good place for staff.
I also want to add something. People don't like change. And I think usually the most difficult people are the ones who want to stay put and they don't want to change. We need to show them the different ways that we can, we can work with them. I didn't say that we don't want to keep them, but we also want to show support. However, it is up to us as leaders that we show them, okay, we're supporting you with the new change. We need you to come back. Now, we also have responsibility, and it is up to us to let them know. I am trying to work with you. We need to change, but we have to also be accountable for the education of these students. So what I'm basically saying is, yes, you have to keep on top of them, whether it's writing up, but you also have to show them the support. That's why I said support and discipline.
All right. I have one last question that I'm going to contend with. Actually, Liza, you kind of spoke on it a little bit, but maybe if you could elaborate a little bit more. The question is, how do you deal with difficult superintendents or other district office staff?
One of the things I've done in the past, I have actually invited the superintendent to my office to show them the wonderful celebrations we have among students. Now, I also try to speak to the superintendent as to what is her vision. I need to align my vision with her vision because her vision is from the chancellor. So where is it that I'm hitting and miss? So I need to have extensive conversation with the superintendent on a one-to-one so that we can work together. She can see my needs for the students, and I can also understand where she wants us to lead because she also has goals. However, district staff, I, again, would invite them if they have an expertise and they have experience. For example, I have to learn about the budget. I have invited people in. Show me. Let me go to you. It's about connecting and then showing, keeping, sending thank you notes. Thank you for I appreciate the fact that you have a busy time. Thank you for coming and working with me. I've noticed that I try your recommendation A, B, and C. These were the results. However, I also want to share with you a little feedback that I've done. So it's also about feedback. And it's a process. It's going to take time. Don't expect to do things overnight. It could take several months, a year, 2 years, or maybe, you know, a little bit longer than that. But yes, the bottom line is you want to work with district people, your superintendent. It's not an "they got you, I know better." It's not a power pole. It's about how can we together join and work to make to give the students the best education they could possibly receive.
Great answer. So at this time, I would like to thank our panelists. On behalf of NAESB, I'd like to thank the President-elect Dave Wick, as well as Liza Caraballo Suarez for joining us. I did some research myself, so for all everyone that's on, I have a link at the bottom. It's an additional resource. It's views of speakers all over the world who deal with difficult issues. So if you would write that down or get a chance and check out that link, that hyperlink, it's a very informative information that you probably really get some background from dealing with difficult people. But again, on behalf of NAESP, I'd like to thank you again, our Executive Director, Earl Franks, our Associate Executive Director of Professional Learning, Gail Morgan, and my partner, Honor Phoebe, in the background. We'd like to thank you for this installment of the Early Career Principle. And again, we'll see you in the following months. Thanks again, and see you soon.